number seven?
Item number seven is the general category is low threat and general discharge cases, and specifically we have two proposed discharges to be enrolled under the low threat permit. They're both desal facilities, and again, Dr. Van Langen of our staff will present the staff report.
But before he does that,
Chairman Young.
Yes.
I need to make a statement because I will recuse myself from this item.
Okay.
So if I could just take a second here. I will recuse myself on this issue due to my involvement with work on the Carmel River and watershed restoration issues. In this effort, I have met with representatives of California American Water regarding the San Clemente Dam and other matters that affect the river. However, to be clear, there is no direct conflict of interest as I have not engaged in any contract or in any grant from CalAM associated with this work. But my concern for the appearance of bias and any reflection on the decisions of this board regarding California American Water is sufficient, and therefore I'm not going to participate in the hearing on this item. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Hunter. Mr. Jeffries.
Yes, Mr. Chair, do I have 3 minutes?
Let me start this.
I would like to read a statement and address this item number seven, the desal plants. I would like to address two relationships the public may have concerns about. I have had no prohibitive ex parte contacts on these two projects, nor do I have any improper biases regarding any of the entities or contractors involved. However, in order to avoid any appearance of bias, I would like to discuss these matters. First, my nephew, Mark Del Piero, is an attorney and represents Pardo-Sunny Mesa Water District. I don't know whether he represents Poseidon Resources Corporation, which is Pardo-Sunny Mesa's contractor for the pilot desal project. I have never discussed any desalization project with Mark Del Piero because I knew this matter would likely come before this board for permitting. I do not know anything about the nature of Mark's Del Piero's financial interest in Pardo-Sunny Mesa Water District, including how he calculates his illegal fees. I don't his legal fees, not illegal fees. Excuse me. That's
you know what they say about Freudian slips.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'm going to hear about that. We have to have a little levity once in a while. I don't know how the board's issuance or denial of a permit for the pilot project would affect his financial interest. Second, I serve on the board of the Moss Landing Harbor District. I receive $100 per meeting for serving on the district board, which is regulated by the state boating and waterways rules and regulations. The Harbor District recently renegotiated its outfall lease with Duke Energy for the Moss Landing Power Plant. CalAM proposed using the outfall in its pilot project. I did not participate in the lease negotiations, and I left the room when the negotiations and the deliberation was taken by the Harbor District when they approved the lease. Again, because this board regulates the Moss Landing Power Plant. The Harbor District also has a lease covering National Refractory's outfall that the Pardo-Sunny Mesa Water District proposes to use. That lease agreement was negotiated many years ago with either Kaiser or National Refractories, who previously owned the facilities. The Harbor District might ultimately negotiate a lease agreement for a desal project outfall, but to the date, this matter has not come before the Harbor District for consideration, nor have we discussed it. To my knowledge, the Harbor District has not taken any policy position regarding the desal in general or these two projects in particular. I have no financial interest in either of these projects or Mr. Del Piero or these entities involved in them. I have no bias either for or against CalAM or Pardo-Sunny Mesa based upon my nephew's representation of Pardo-Sunny Mesa Water District or my position with the Harbor District. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Now we'll go to Dr. Van Langen.
Chair Young, members of the board. Now it's really good evening. I'm going to give a quick update or a quick summary of the enrollment of Cal-Am and Poseidon pilot desalination plants under the low threat permit as proposed by staff. There's two separate pilot desalination plants proposed for Moss Landing. One is from the California American Water Company, and this pilot desalination plant is proposed for the Moss Landing Power Plant location. There is a separate Poseidon Resources Corporation pilot desalination plant that's proposed for the former National Refractory site, and they are working on this with the public entity, the Pajaro-Sunny Mesa Community Service District. Both of these are small temporary pilot plants on the order of a year or so to test desalination methods. Staff proposes to separately enroll both pilot plants under the general low threat permit waste discharge requirement order number 01-119. Any full-scale desalination plants would be permitted individually and separately at a later date. Some of the public comments were CEQA related regarding these pilot desalination plants, but these are categorically exempt from CEQA. One is that enrollment in the general permit is not subject to CEQA because the desal projects are not a project in CEQA terms. The project subject to CEQA was the adoption of the general permit. Additionally, the general permit was exempt from CEQA pursuant to Water Code Section 13389, as NPDES permits are exempt from CEQA. Additionally, Monterey County has determined both of these pilot projects to be exempt from CEQA because they are collection, research, or experimental activities, and are therefore it's not a CEQA issue with the county as well. First, I'll briefly talk about the California American pilot desalination plan at Moss Landing. Here's an aerial photo of the Moss Landing power plant area with Moss Landing Harbor down here, the entrance to Monterey Bay, the Pacific Ocean out here with the jetties at Moss Landing, and the entrance to Elkhorn Slough here. Some features on this aerial photo are the intake structures from the Moss Landing power plant. The green area here is the 0.2-acre site where the pilot desalination plant by Cal-Am is proposed to be located, and they propose to take the once-through cooling water after it's been heated up by the power plant and then discharged offshore in the outfall about 600 feet from the coast and 30 feet of water in Monterey Bay. Here's a close-up of the green area where the pilot desalination plant by Cal-Am is proposed to be located. It's these large structures here are the pipes for the once-through cooling of the power plant. And to give you a perspective on the amount of water that the pilot desalination plant will take compared to the once-through cooling water of the Moss Landing power plant, this schematic is to scale. There's 750 million gallons a day on average since the 80s that the Moss Landing facility has used for once-through cooling water. This cross-sectional area is 0.14 million gallons a day of once-through cooling water that will be taken into the pilot desalination plant. They will separate it into a product water of 0.06 million gallons. It should have a line connecting here, and a brine of 0.08 million gallons. The brine and product water will recombine as a 0.14 million gallons a day and then be injected into the pipe that will then discharge offshore into Monterey Bay.
You know, I picked up from your staff report that the reason this is low threat at this point because the desalinated water is going back into the stream, into the effluent. So there's essentially no real change in salinity.
There's no brine discharge. It's combined fresh water and brine to make the normal seawater salinity.
Okay, so we're going to have a different situation, though, if this project comes back, and they will be removing water, and the salinity potentially is going to go up. Is it just so infinitesimal?
We won't permit that one under the low-threat permit.
Okay.
We will look at that closely and individually look at it to see if it's permittable with the information that we asked for.
Well, would it be an NPDES permit?
Oh, yes, it would be an individual NPDES permit.
Okay.
So they're putting both the water and the brine back?
Yes. For this pilot.
Because it's a pilot.
This is a pilot project.
For testing.
Separate the salt from the water.
Yeah.
You do it, that's fine.
Yeah.
In summary of the Cal American Water Company pilot desal plant, it'll take 1.14 million gallons a day of warm water from the once-through cooling system. There'll be no impingement or entrainment because of that, because they're taking this water that's already been taken from the power plant, so there's no impingement or entrainment from this. They'll add small quantities of inorganic chemicals that are suitable for drinking water, and the waste produced during filter backwash and cleaning will be collected and disposed of off-site, and these amount to about 100 to 150 gallons per day. They'll then recombine the water and brine and mix it with the large flow from the once-through cooling plant before discharge offshore. Here's a list of chemicals that they're used in the Cal-Am pilot desalination plant. Typical chemicals such as sodium hypochlorite, sulfuric acid, ferric chloride, sodium hydroxide, sodium bisulfate, and all these are approved for drinking water standards. These chemicals dissolve into naturally occurring ions that occur in very high concentrations in seawater. For example, the sulfuric acid, if you they have 2 gallons per day of sulfuric acid they're adding to the desalination process. The sulfuric acid dissociates in water to make hydronium ion and hydrogen sulfate. Then this dissolves into sulfate ion on the bottom right-hand corner here. To look at the concentrations in natural seawater, here's a normal breakdown of the main chemical constituents that make up seawater. Every cubic meter of seawater contains 35,000 milligrams per kilogram of chemicals, or these salts. The sulfate here is 2,690 milligrams per liter in concentration in seawater. Here's a table showing, for comparison, sulfuric acid that they add to the pilot desal plant, and the amount they add would make a worst-case flow in this column here, which is a worst-case flow of a low flow from the power plant for dilution, would make a concentration of 0.036 milligrams per liter in addition to what's already found in seawater. So 0.036 milligrams per liter compared to normal sulfate concentrations of 2,690. So it's not significant compared to what's already in seawater. These are harmless chemicals that are out there naturally. Next, I'll move on to the Poseidon Resources Corporation pilot desalination plant at the former National Refractory site. Here's an aerial photo showing the Moss Landing power plant again. The approximate location of the Cal-Am project would be here. And here's the temporary pilot plant for Poseidon, Pajaro, Sunny Mesa, about this area here. The intake of the Poseidon project is, or the National Refractory site that the Poseidon project proposes to use, is approximately here. And then it would discharge offshore in about 40 feet of water in this location. For reference, this is the thermal plume from the Moss Landing power plant near the entrance to the harbor and Elkhorn Slough. The boundary of the National Refractories property is approximately here. Here's some photos that were sent in the notice of intent from Poseidon regarding the temporary pilot facility. These are when it was set up down in the Carlsbad area of San Diego, where they initially did a pilot project down there looking towards a large-scale pilot or large-scale desalination facility in conjunction with the Encina power plant. Here's the pretreatment filters of this pilot facility down in Carlsbad. And here's a schematic of the from Poseidon showing the intake water over here, where they propose to use the existing National Refractories inlet. They also proposed that the possibility would be use the Moss Landing power plant water as well, take it through a screening process, through some sedimentation process, and then eventually make brine and product water, then recombine the product water and brine and discharge it offshore at the National Refractories outfall. A summary of the Poseidon Resources pilot project is that they propose to take up to 0.29 million gallons a day from the National Refractories intake. There would be negligible impingement and entrainment based on a volumetric comparison to the nearby Moss Landing Power Plant that impingement and entrainment studies have been worked on, that the intake there takes about 750 million gallons a day of seawater, and this is 0.29 million gallons a day. There's small quantities of inorganic chemicals, very similar to what were added or proposed to be added by the CalAmp pilot project, and the waste produced during the reverse osmosis membrane cleaning will be collected in storage tanks and disposed of off-site. They also propose to recombine the product water and brine before discharging offshore.
Is this intake being used right now?
It is currently being used by Moss Landing Marine Labs and the Monterey Bay Aquarium Research Institute. They take small amounts of water in and separately put it to their own facilities and then discharge it back out into the ocean. Its regional board staff has determined from the evidence that it will not harm beneficial uses. So in conclusion, staff intends to enroll both pilot plant projects under the general low-threat permit separately, and I'm here to address questions from the board in public.
Okay. Dr. Press.
I didn't see in the staff report a timeline. I assume that this is a kind of a proof of concept pilot proposal that both entities are making, right? And they're both saying that the effects would be negligible because the waters will be recombined, et cetera. But what is the how long do they propose to run the pilot?
CalAmp proposes to run the pilot for 1 year, and I believe Poseidon was up to 2 years.
Okay.
I need to refresh my memory on that.
So just help me out here. Why would you run a pilot for 2 years that you're not making any money on? Why would you run it that long? Do you need to, technically, to get the data about whether the process works? And secondly, if you are recombining the product water and the brine, you're not selling the product water, so that's a long time to carry the costs for the equipment, the installation, all the rest of it. Can you help me understand that?
Well, they want to test different pretreatment methods. I can't really say anything about what makes the best business sense for them, but consultants from CalAmp are here, from RBF Consulting,
okay.
And the vice president from Poseidon is here as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other board questions before we go to the speaker cards?
Yeah, one.
Mr. Shallcross.
I got one, too.
On the intake on the National Refractories intake, how much do you know? How much the Imbari and the Moss Landing Marine Lab, how much their intake is? You said this one's supposed to be 0.29 million, and what's their intake?
It is. I had that memorized a while ago, but I think it's on the order of a half a million or something.
Okay, half.
Kind of guessing here. It may be up on the million gallons per day, but that's only from comparison on the top of my mind with other labs.
And you said that the entrainment and impingement would be negligible, but that doesn't mean that there won't be any, right?
I've got some slides here I could show that give the estimates of how much impingement and entrainment.
I don't think it's really helpful to see it in comparison to Moss Landing, if you know what I mean. Just what's going to happen here is what we're looking at.
It would be...
go ahead and put the slide on.
Yeah, I can go ahead and... Let's
see. In other words, do you have an estimate for the pounds of fish that are going to be impinged, pounds of larvae that are going to be entrained for this particular site?
Here, for example, if you look at the right column, this is based on the power plant data that shows a power plant roughly takes about say, 10 to 20% of any particular larvae of fish entrained at the power plant using 750 million gallons a day. They used a volumetric approach to compare that to the pilot desalination plant. Unfortunately, this came in very small here, but if you look up in the top right, instead of 10%, it's 0.00004, so it's 4/10,000ths of a percent of any larvae could be entrained, possibly entrained. So it's a very small number. For comparison on impingement on caught on the screens, I believe the power plant impinges about 1,000 pounds of fish per day, or crustaceans and fish, and so that works out to a few pounds per day. This is several orders of magnitude less.
Wait, you said 1,000 pounds per day?
Oh, I'm sorry, per year. I apologize. So like 3 pounds per day.
Okay.
And so this is several orders of magnitude less than 3 pounds per day of impingement.
Well, if I can just continue on this, I appreciate that, you know, that it's much smaller than Moss Landing, but I have a problem with that kind of a comparison, because if my neighbor is, you know, polluting 100 pounds, then that must be okay for me to pollute 1 pound, right? Because by comparison, it's nothing. And it's that kind of comparison, I think, that doesn't let us look at the really judge it on its own merit. I'm not saying that that this is a big issue here, but I just think the comparison is a little disingenuous.
Mr. Chairman? Hi.
Yes.
I was just doing some back-of-the-envelope calculations in response to what you were asking Mr. Shellcross, and not comparing it to Moss Landing, but just saying how many pounds of fish would be impinged if it had an intake structure that operated in the way that a shoreline intake structure operates. I came up with 230 pounds a year of fish.
And can you do that with the entrainment?
I can't do it based on the information we have here. Okay. But can I do it? Yes.
Yeah.
But not right now.
That would have been helpful. But no.
Okay. Dr. Bowker.
A question and a comment. Why are these desal plants coupled to Moss Landing? Why would you do that?
They are looking to put desalination plants, as far as I understand, in conjunction with power plants, because then it makes the reverse osmosis technology much more cost-effective to produce drinking water, because you can use the thermal heat generated from plants.
So it's an energy saving because you're already using warm water. Mm-hmm. Second one is, my concern is with the Poseidon project. Although entrainment and impingement is a very small amount, I'm very bothered by setting up a precedent for incremental degradation. My lawnmower doesn't do much. Your lawnmower doesn't do much. Yours doesn't. But collectively, we do a lot. So I'm really, I need to think about the idea of having a new facility, whatever, that has, however so small, an entrainment and impingement issue.
I have a slide for some mitigation that they're proposing to utilize at the Poseidon project to reduce impingement and entrainment. Here's a schematic of an intake velocity reduction chamber that they are proposing to put on the intake that would reduce the velocity to less than 0.25 feet per second, which is half of what the 316B regulations are calling for large power plants that use at least 50 million gallons a day of once-through cooling water. So this is something that they're proposing to cool there. For comparison, also with the 0.29 million gallons that Poseidon proposes, the former National Refractory site, I believe, pumped in about 6 million gallons a day. So that's
irrelevant.
Yeah.
Poseidon's using the power plant, right?
No, Poseidon would like to, well, I think they would, they've sent a schematic saying that either going to use the intake of the National Refractories or the power plant, but as it's proposed, it looks like it's the national
one that's using the power plant, that's not resulting in any additional impingement or entrainment.
Right, exactly so.
I just wanted to point out, too, that 316B doesn't apply to either of these projects because it's not cooling water. There's a similar provision in Porter Cologne that deals with new or expanded, among other things, industrial installation using seawater for industrial processing. And there's no guidance that clarifies whether this is industrial processing or whether they really mean process water. I think it would be pretty easy to make an argument that this is industrial processing, but there's at this point no authority on how that section applies.
What doesn't apply?
316B doesn't apply. So the standards for considering impingement and entrainment under 316B
don't apply
to these projects in any way.
But what is the statute for the industrial use of water?
If it applies, it requires that the best available site design technology and mitigation measures feasible be used to minimize intake and mortality.
This is a slide of what they propose to use to mitigate entrainment. These disc filters on the intake structure, in addition to the velocity reduction slide shown here, I believe this disc filter would be a small part down here that would make a small pore area for small plankton and so on to get caught on the filters, and then there's a back flush or backflow that comes from a pressure differential in there so that it would supposedly, in theory, release these entrained organisms back into the environment. They've proposed to also hire Tenera Environmental to do some work on studying the reduction in entrainment and impingement, or what entrainment and impingement could happen from this facility. So that's another part of their mitigation that they've proposed.
Question. How much smaller are the pilot projects than a complete full-scale operation that would use the cooling water from a power plant? What order of magnitude is the pilot relative to?
The pilot project is the Poseidon one proposes 0.29 million gallons a day. The full-scale projects are proposing to use 50 million gallons a day.
50?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Are any parts of the pilot project going to be used in the larger project, or is that even?
I can't answer that question. I think the consultants here could. Okay. I think only the data is being used for the full scale.
Thanks.
Okay, board. We've got about seven. I have seven cards. Do I want to just plow right in? And this is the last item tonight, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. Why don't we do that? We'll start in James Brizak, Peter McLagan, and Mark Del Piero. There's one card. David Dilworth, Carolyn Nielsen, Nancy Pratt, and Linda Agerbach, and Connor Everts, and Madeline Clark. Don't have a card for her, but... She didn't have one. Yeah, no, I don't think she had one. Remember, she came up in the end. Okay, let's move on. Mr. Brizak.
Thank you, Chairman Young, members of the board. My name is Jim Brizak. I have been coordinating with staff for quite a while on the enrollment for this project under the low-threat discharge permit on behalf of the California American Water Company, and this is for only the pilot plant for the coastal water project. I'm an employee of RBF Consulting, project manager, water resources, and we are under contract with California American. I would like to thank staff for all the assistance that they've provided the excellent presentation, which relieves me of having to make a formal presentation. Rather than do that, what I would like to do is answer some of the questions that you've already posed or deal with any other questions that you might have as it relates to California American and the pilot plant project. The timeline that we perceive is 1 year of operation, and the purpose behind that, we feel that it's sufficient for us in order to conduct enough data on the operation of the facility, analyze pretreatment requirements, test out different modes of operation, and gather data that's necessary for Department of Health Services for their permitting for water supply facility, as well as for the watershed sanitary survey. The coupling with the Moss Landing power plant, as was mentioned, there is the potential for substantial benefit for cost savings, both in terms potentially of lower energy costs, if that could be negotiated successfully, as well as a benefit to the pilot plant of using existing facilities and taking advantage of the high dilution rates that Peter had talked about. Also, it was previously the recommendation co-location with power plants of the State DCEL Task Force as benefiting to the environment if that could be accomplished. And any other further consideration of co-location would be later taken up as a part of the full-scale facility considerations. We are at a 10 million gallon projected ultimate capacity of that future project. We're at 0.14 now, so it's about two orders of magnitude higher. And there would be no reuse of any of the facilities that are envisioned from the pilot plant under the full scale. So everything would be removed at the end of the 1 year period. And I believe that was all the questions brought up, but if there's any more.
Well, what happens if the law gets interpreted to take away once-through cooling at this power plant? What would happen to these projects? Do they become dead?
I don't think it would become dead. The project has prepared a proponent's environmental assessment, which has now been handed over to the California Public Utility Commission, who is the lead agency, and their team is preparing their own environmental document, which would cover the full-scale facility. Alternatives are developed and analyzed that use other sources of water as well. However, the most important thing for us now is moving ahead diligently pursuant to Board Order 9510 and getting as much data as we can as soon as we can.
All right. Do you have all the necessary permits and authorization to move forward? The county, Marine Sanctuary, Coastal Commission. You don't have this one yet, but do you have all those in line?
On August 29th, we received our coastal development permit from the county. So that has been approved. The Coastal Commission has been following very closely. We've been paralleling with Tom Luster and his staff all of the actions, every approval, every submittal. We are anticipating that in October, the Coastal Commission, through their retained authority on this project, will consider a coastal development permit also.
Our staff implied that you were not selling your water. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Because there was, if I remember correctly, some time back there was a newspaper article that there was possibility that you were going to sell the byproduct to ag culture. That's not correct. That was misprint.
There will be no sale of the water.
Okay.
Mr. Shellcross.
Hopefully you have this at the tip of your tongue. I could figure it out. But the 10 million, this is the final plant, right? You're proposing 10 million gallons a day.
Yes.
How many acre feet is that a year?
10,000 acre feet per year.
Now that makes it easy to figure out.
Roughly.
Oh, okay, roughly. Okay, thanks.
Okay. Any other questions? The speaker? No? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And I guess, Mr. Dell, let's see.
Peter McLagan.
This is Peter McLagan.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
All right.
Peter McLagan, representing Pajaro, Sunny Mesa, and Poseidon Resources. Let me just start with some of the questions were raised. I have a few prepared remarks I'd like to get into when we get done, but let's get to your questions first. And I will, Mr. Chairman, board members, I'll start with the question raised by Board Member Press regarding the length of the pilot studies. It's actually a three-year period that we are looking for to potentially operate this facility. And the question is a logical question. Why do any more than a year, one seasonal cycle, and you should have all the information you need? And we feel a little differently on that point. We've been operating our pilot plant down in Carlsbad for 4 years now. We've seen that red tides come and go. Wet weather conditions are different from year to year. The more operational data you can get, the better you can refine the design, select which treatment technologies do the best job, and hone that plant to its highest efficiency and optimum operation. And getting to your second question, Directors or Board Members Shellcroft and Bowker raised some concerns about entrainment and impingement, and we expect to develop with this plant some rather unique science and develop some new technology to minimize entrainment and impingement. It has been made abundantly clear to us that entrainment and impingement is an issue of concern with open surface water intakes, and we have incorporated in this pilot plant design, as described by staff, very specific features, first of all, to slow down the velocity of the water approaching that intake to half the federal best management standard of 5 feet per second. We'll be at 2 feet per second. Then we have a 500 micron screen, which is designed to remove the bulk of the entrainable material, but not all of them. And then we have a subsequent screen downstream that we think will catch the rest of the entrainable material and be designed in such a way that we can wash those organisms off the screen down to the ocean. And with the help of Terranera Environmental and other marine scientists, we hope to be able to demonstrate that we can render the entrainment and the impingement issues to a level of less than significant for the full-scale plant. So do we have all the answers right now on that issue? Absolutely not. Is there going to be some mortality associated with this pilot plant? Yes, but we think it's de minimis given the numbers that were presented here today. I do not agree with the calculation that was presented earlier, if I understood it correctly, that there would be 230 pounds per year of entrainment associated with this intake. We believe there will be none because of the low velocity. I'm sorry, impingement. There was not an entrainment figure provided. I have with me my technical director, who is much better versed on all of this than I am, and he's available to get into this in depth if you care to do so today. Let me just touch upon a couple of other questions that were raised before I go to my remarks. Just going back to the Carlsbad situation and what we have learned there over the last 4 years, we really think that it has been tremendous in terms of its ability to help us improve the efficiency in the operation. And as a result of this, this project in this year was awarded the grand prize for research by the American Academy of Environmental Engineers. And next week in Beijing, we will receive from the International Water Association their grand prize for research. This is in the water community, the international best of series for research. And that's the type of work we do. We don't cut corners. We don't limit the cost of the time. We do the work necessary because the full-scale plant needs to be at its optimum efficiency. With that, the question was raised, why the Moss Landing location? And it has to do with a couple of things. First of all, the MOA that you all entered into with the National Marine Sanctuary limits and prohibits discharges from new intakes and new outfalls. We happen to have in this area existing intakes and existing outfalls that are grandfathered in to allow projects of this nature, critically needed water supply plants, to operate. Secondly, this is a regional water supply proposal. It's intended not only to address the needs on the peninsula, but also to address the needs in North County. So this is in the heart of the service area served by Pajaro Sunny Mesa, and they intend to use this plant to serve their customers in close proximity from Moss Landing and in the surrounding area. With that, Mr. Chairman, if I could just share with you a few thoughts on the staff recommendation before you. And first of all, Obviously, I am here today on behalf of the district and Poseidon to support the staff recommendation to regulate this permit under enrollment through the general low-threat permit category. Our objectives are fourfold for the pilot plant. First of all, to assess the feasibility using site-specific conditions of a full-scale desalination plant using source water quality at the same location that that full-scale plant would be located. We are there to collect technical data required for project permitting. We are there to assess the feasibility of alternative technologies. You might have noted we have a double the flow rate as that in the Cal-M proposal because we're proposing to operate two desal plants side by side with different technologies that are basically competing against each other to show the lowest cost, highest efficiency solution. So rather than test one, test two and let them, you know, go head to head and show which does the better job in terms of cleaning the water at the lowest cost and the highest optimum efficiency. The last objective of the four is to create opportunities for public education and outreach. We have found with our other facilities, you bring the decision makers down, you bring the school kids down, you bring the community, let them taste the water, let them see the facility, understand how it operates. It helps with the education process and get to a decision as to how to address water issues in the community. There's a couple of points I want to make regarding what's included in the permit to ensure that your obligation to protect and adhere to all the state and federal regulations has been met with respect to water quality. And first and foremost, I mentioned this application before you is backed up by 4 years of pilot plant experience in Southern California. It's backed up by 6 months of local source water quality data that allows us to put information before your staff that shows that we can comply with all the ocean plan requirements. It's backed up with estimates of what sort of entrainment and impingement levels would occur absent the mitigation measures, and the research is included in the study plan to ensure to verify what additional improvement we get with the proposed mitigation measures, the dual screening concept. And then lastly, there is a monitoring and reporting program that will require us to do regular monthly and semi-annual testing to verify that we're in compliance with all of your ocean plan requirements. All 330-some-odd constituents regulated under the ocean plan will be tested and monitored at some point during the operation. Finally, this is a temporary project. It is an operation that we expect to run for up to 3 years. We may not go that full time if we think we've accomplished all our objectives, but that's what we're requesting in the permit is a 3-year operating provision. In conclusion, it's our view that it's reasonable, it's appropriate to for you, the regional board, to approve the staff recommendation to regulate this project under the low threat permit and to that will ensure that we are complying with your obligations to enforce state and federal law. We are prepared to comply with those permit requirements and all of the provisions therein, and we urge your approval of the staff recommendation. Thank you very much. District Council Mark Del Piero.
Is he speaking as part of, you know, I think you were allotted 10 minutes.
I am here
To answer questions? Okay. All right.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask the same questions to Pyro Sunny Mason and Poseidon. Do you have all your permits in, so far in line? Have they been approved except for here?
No, this is not the last. We also need our coastal development permit to be approved by the Coastal Commission, and we are working through that process with the coastal staff at this time.
And let me ask you the same question I did to Cal-Am. Are you planning on selling any of your byproduct?
No, sir.
Has the county already issued the coastal development permit and the Coastal Commission is going to review it?
That's correct.
Okay.
Okay, Dr. Bowker.
Okay. On your full-scale plant, they're going to draw the water from the ocean?
Directly from the ocean? Is that the question?
I think so. Put it differently. The reason you have the site there is because of the existing intake structures. Is that right?
Intakes and outfalls and suitable industrial zone land and close proximity to the service area of the water supply.
Okay, so your plant, the full-scale plant, will not use cooling water effluent? And it
may, and let me explain why we're looking at both. You might have noticed in the flow diagram that staff presented that we're looking at both source waters. And the reason why we're looking at both is the Coastal Commission has made it very clear to us that in their view, the future of once through cooling is limited, and all desal proponents that are proposing to co-locate or use a effluent from a once through cooled power plant are obligated to analyze the impacts of that desal plant as though that power plant is not there. And that is the reason why we are taking significant steps to look at both source water supplies, analyze the impacts as though the power plant is there, analyze the impacts as though it's not there, and propose mitigation for the entrainment that would address both situations.
Okay.
So is it crystal clear that for your project, for the pilot project, you would definitely be using the National Refractories intake?
Initially. And we hope at some point to use the power plant intake for our studies as well.
So sometime in the three-year period, you might say, you might start with National Refractories, and then you might go to the Moss Landing.
Or we could do both concurrently, because we at some point we're going to have two operating full-scale pilot plants there side by side.
Uh-huh.
So they could be running side by side on different source waters or the same source water. We have that flexibility built into the design.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Okun, can I ask you a question? Can we permit either the pilot or a full scale and only one intake and outfall? Or in other words, can we tell the discharger, can we say, well, you can get a permit for using the once through cooling water, but you can't get a permit for the National Refractories water?
If the board doesn't think that the discharge qualifies for the low threat permit, you could. I mean, they're two separate projects.
Well, that's what I'm asking. I'm asking if, I guess what I'm saying is that what you're telling me is that if the board made that determination, it would deny the use of the National Refractories intake and would signal to the discharger that the once through cooling from the power plant was a more viable way to go for the low threat waiver. I think you've answered my question.
Right, and this is just for the pilot project,
yes,
too. So
yes, yeah, okay.
And not allowing them to use the low-threat permit just means they have to apply for an individual NPDES permit. So basically the direction to staff would be that the board doesn't think this is a low-threat discharge.
Uh-huh. Okay.
May I speak to that point?
Question.
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
I just wanted to reiterate that our purposes here on looking at both intakes and developing the science necessary to look at some innovative, creative ways to address entrainment and impingement is the very reason that this subject has become the issue of great attention. And that has not escaped our attention, and we take these concerns very seriously. So one of our key objectives with this proposal is to come up with new technology that will minimize the entrainment and impingement to a level less than significance. If we are denied the opportunity to operate that open ocean intake, the National Refractories intake, we will not have the ability to demonstrate the capabilities of that technology. And I think the state and anybody else that has interest in this subject elsewhere in the world will be lost a great opportunity to look and see if there isn't some creative ways to address a problem of concern to the regulatory community in the state of California and perhaps elsewhere. So I would urge your approval of the staff recommendation as proposed.
So you couldn't do these experiments on the Moss Landing intake?
No, let me elaborate why not. The once through cooling system is very close to 100% mortality of any of the entrained organisms. So by the time the water came to us, they're all dead. What we're doing with these...
No. I meant at the intake end.
At the Moss Landing intake?
Yeah. He's talking about...
I haven't looked at the physical capabilities to get water out of that intake. You're saying before it goes through the cooling system.
Well, I'm asking is whatever experiments and you know new technologies you might try to use for the National Refractories intake, is that something that you could do at the Moss Landing intake?
I don't know the answer to that because I haven't looked at whether or not there's capabilities.
It wouldn't be so big, it wouldn't fall under the exemption.
The point here is that we need to be able to demonstrate that we can screen the organisms out, and then with the we collect the water and verify that those organisms were removed mm-hmm. from the system and that they were returned to the ocean in a state that they will survive. And this is the subject of some rather sophisticated biological studies that will be conducted by our marine science team.
I guess all I'm saying is there's no way that Moss Landing couldn't try this on their own. Or in conjunction with you guys.
I'm not familiar enough with their operation to say whether or not that could be done on that property. I don't know the answer to that question.
I mean, if these are potentially, you know, really helpful as far as dealing with the entrainment and impingement issues, then I'd hate to see us lose the opportunity too. And you know, I just think there might be other places you might try it out. If you don't get to try it out.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I don't know who on staff, maybe Lori or Peter, would be able to answer this, but the intake of the National Refractories permit, does it preclude or have any exemptions on impingement or entrainment?
No.
So if it was under manufacturing, as it was before, years ago, and somewhat now as a manufacturing facilities, they could take all the water that they wanted to take, no matter what, and use it to make bricks as they did there before. I mean, they could redo that plant and start building bricks again, as it did years ago. And we would have the loss of all of those fish, larvae, and all the sea animals that would be sucked up to that intake. Is that an analogy? Am I going the right analogy?
Yeah, the 316B regulations only deal with once through cooling systems that are using at least 50 million gallons a day,
right.
Except that there is a provision in Porter Cologne that requires the best available mitigation and technology, and that would clearly apply because that would be industrial process water.
Right, and I'm going on with some of Mr. Shellcross brought up that I think we have an opportunity with this project because we know what Cal-Am's going to, what their results is because we know what Duke is already doing. But here we have an opportunity to maybe look at new technology that could be expanded to other once-through-cooled facilities up and down the coast, including Moss Landing, Morro Bay, and possibly Diablo Canyon. So I applaud the idea of the improvement. And, of course, the proof of the pudding would be your test over 2 or 3 years, whatever it happens to be, and the technology that you would build and continue to revise to make that acceptable. But and I want to point out to the board, if this particular site was used as a manufacturing, totally, we wouldn't have none of this. So here I think we have an opportunity with this particular plant that whatever one succeeds, the technology possibly could be a threshold of new technology to reduce some of this loss that we're losing.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yep.
Just hang on one second.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Go ahead. Let him, if he's going to respond to it. Yeah.
Did you want him to do that? Because I was going to try to get us through.
Well, I always had another question for him.
Yeah, I do,
but
too.
I thought he wanted to respond to Mr. Jeffries.
Well, I was asking the staff, but I...
Well,
I think
Lori
answered and Peter kind of answered.
Okay.
Just wanted to speak to the point raised by council. In the water code, we are considered a industrial facility, and water code section 13142.5B says that industrial facilities are obligated to use the best design technology mitigation to minimize the impacts to marine organisms to the extent feasible. And what we're trying to do with the pilot plant is to identify what's the best design and technology and mitigation, and that's what this is all about. We don't have the answer to that question. That's what pilots are about, their research, and I'll stop right there and let you get back to your discussion.
Okay.
I just have one more quick question for this guy.
Okay. Go ahead. Last one.
Okay.
Your 3 minutes are up.
In the pilot project, at any point, are you going to be making modifications to the intake and or outflow structures themselves?
No, sir.
Okay, thanks.
I have a question about the volume of discharge. The staff report says that the plant will discharge up to 0.29 MGD of waste, desal, brine, and product water. How much of that is brine and how much is product water?
Product and brine are about 20 gallons a minute apiece. Is that correct? So times, so that's 28. That's, let's say, that's about 6,000 gallons, 60,000 gallons a day. All right.
What's your question? Are they equal?
Well, if they're equal, it would be half.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. David Dilworth. Mr. Dilworth has left us. Carolyn Nielsen. And then Nancy Pratt.
President Young and honorable board members, thank you for this opportunity. I am presently much, much more concerned about the thermal discharge than I am about entrainments, and I will try to explain why. Also, I believe that the desal facility is premature, and I'll attempt to explain. I studied microbiology in college, and then after that was the lab, managed the lab at the college for 1 year. Did all the inoculation of the petri dishes and maintaining all the cultures. Between July 21st and August 22nd in San Jose, there were more than two dozen children who contracted serious Cryptosporidium and Salmonella infections from playing in the fountain at Cesar Chavez Plaza. The county did not realize that that beautiful sparkling water was that dangerous. Of course, now they are going to monitor it and try to prevent that from happening again. This occurred because of the warm weather that happened during that time. We all know that if you leave a bowl of potato salad out on the table, picnic table, it doesn't take very long for that to become actually deadly. We have a situation now occurring in the nearshore waters adjacent to the power plant. Bacteria have reproduced to dangerous levels, and this is the reason, or at least one of the reasons, why sea otters are getting more diseases and dying. I have this midterm report from a Dr. Karantha Challen Cannon, who is doing work for the National Marine Sanctuary, trying to determine what is causing sea otters to sicken and die. And in his midterm report, he says, Postmortem examination of carcasses documented that several lethal diseases are present in the California sea otter population and suggests that disease prevalence is increasing. When you have a warm, nutrient-rich water, which is definitely a description of the water adjacent to the power plant, you are going to have bacteria proliferating to dangerous levels. It's just inevitable. There's runoff from the dairy. There are animals that are defecating in and birds all the time. There is detritus from the power plant. This is definitely a nutrient-rich environment. Anyway, we need to do something about the hot water plume before we plug in a desal plant. And I have a suggestion that is really off the wall, because it seems like we have a cruel irony taking place here. It's the laws and the regulations of the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary that are prohibiting Duke Energy from the obvious simple solution, which is to take the thermal plume structure and move it farther out into deeper, colder water. Then you wouldn't have the circulation. This is the 1,000-foot radius of where the plume is supposed to not get 4 degrees above ambient temperature. But we know from the latest document that I got from the Energy Commission that it enters the slough, and I have these for you if you want them. I made copies. It enters the slough 3 degrees higher than ambient temperature. Oddly, ambient temperature is measured at 10 feet below the surface of ML11. That is just a few feet away from the discharge. This just boggles my mind that that was determined to be the ambient temperature measuring location for
Ms. Nielsen, could you wrap up your comments, please?
Okay. I just was going to appeal to you to please try to find a political solution to work with government people to try and get an exemption so that Duke Energy can move their discharge structure farther out. That means there will be less warm water coming near shore. Surfers, kayakers, people are at risk, not just sea otters.
This is not a political body. But you do have politicians that you elect, and they're really the ones that can help you with that type of challenge.
Well, I don't think I have very much influence, and I bet you do have a whole lot more.
Well, not really. Mr. Shellcross.
Yeah, could I ask that you leave, or maybe you can send them in or leave them if you have extra copies with staff, and maybe these documents can be put into the Moss Landing power plant file? So that when that is, you know, comes up before us, these can be these issues can be dealt with. Thanks. Okay.
Thank you, Nancy Pratt.
Good evening, Nancy Pratt from Carmel Valley, representing Helping Our Peninsula's Environment. Levels of DDT, the sediment of levels of DDT in the sediment of Moss Landing is the highest ever detected in California. The staff report does not mention this. You have to test for DDT in order to find DDT. Both pilot desal plants will pull DDT from soils. DDT continues running off from the land. When the area has been dredged, the material must go to a hazardous waste site. There's that much DDT in the sediment. Needless to say, people will not want to drink or perhaps even use water from either Moss Landing site once the DDT levels are known. We request you direct staff to test for DDT levels at Moss Landing. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Linda Agerbeck.
Good evening, board and staff. Thank you for giving us a chance to talk. We appreciate that the board is safeguarding our water supply. Without water, our community can't exist. here on the peninsula, we've outgrown our water, and we therefore need supplementary water. The State Water Board 9510 has put pressure on our local corporate water monopoly to produce this. It is, however, the ratepayers who pay for these new water supplies, and it seems wrong that there should be competing desal pilot plants when one could do the job. I urge the board to use their considerable influence to bring these parties together. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Connor Everts.
Thank you very much. My name is Connor Everts. I represent the DCEL Response Group, 22 organizations across the state that have been meeting for 4 years with utilities and others along these issues. I also sat on the state DCEL task force, and I've actually been in this maybe a little bit too long. DCEL is an issue that comes up and goes away regularly. In the late 60s, it was proposed to have an offshore man-made nuclear-powered island off of Bolsa Chica, ironically, where they just opened up to seawater to restore the wetlands in that area. While you're simply looking at the discharge from these two pilot plants, it brings up many other statewide issues. The first permitted plant on this coast will be the first on the Pacific Coast, probably the largest in the Western Hemisphere. Ironically, many years ago, my boss was Jerry Maxwell, who was, unfortunately, his last job ended up being the general manager of the failed Tampa Bay plant. I served on the Casitas Municipal Water District and was president of the Groundwater Agency in Casitas in western Ventura County. About 14 years ago, we began looking at desal as an option there. Santa Barbara built one, which stands idle. Ventura decided to maximize local resources. Again, we're talking about these issues. We're talking about pilots. Poseidon says they've had 4 years of pilot already at Carlsbad. I don't know why we haven't answered these questions yet. Another 3 years does nothing to solve the overdraft along the Carmel River and restore any water for steelhead. I'm a rare thing. I'm a Southern California steelhead fisherman, so that's really my interest. I've just been sucked in by the intakes on this issue. The comparisons of the full-size intake to these small pilot projects is kind of beyond belief. I think we should have input on the research, and we should see the results if these are really going to be useful. I'm not against pilot projects or research. I think they should be doing much more of that. Yet at the same time, the EIRs are moving forward, both at the PUC for Cal-Am and for Pajaro Sunny Mesa. They've announced that in November they should be coming out with their EIR. Wouldn't we want to see the results of these pilot projects first before we get the EIRs, rather than feed that information in? And there is a cumulative impact. There's 9 proposed within the Monterey Bay area, 11 within the sanctuary, at least 19 along the coast. We don't have the answers to these. And I would suggest you look to a couple of places. First, Dr. Peter Glick's Desalination with a Grain of Salt, a California Perspective, his report that just came out and is available at pacinst.org. And also on our website, we list all the information that has been gathered from the state task force and other sources, and every one of the projects, including Marin, which is looking at a lot of these intake issues. So I don't see the need. I disagree with the staff report on the low threat threshold, and I appreciate the time very much. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Last speaker, Madeline Clark.
Madeline Clark, Elkhorn Slough Coalition, and 10 more minutes. I'll try and be brief and to the point. I pulled some information out for you in regards to some of the questions that you raised in the previous discussion. I think somebody mentioned the Porter-Cologne Act. I am reading from the California Land Use Commission resolution, where it says, whereas State law under the Porter-Cologne Water Quality Control Act requires the state to implement discharge controls that protect the beneficial uses of the waters and habitats affected by once through cooling. But this would also apply to desalinization facilities. It also says in this same resolution, whereas it is premature to approve new leases or extensions, amendments or modifications of existing leases to include co-located desalinization facilities or other uses of once through cooling water systems until first considering whether the desalinization facility would adversely affect compliance by the power plant with the requirements imposed to implement both the Federal Clean Water Act Section 316B requirements and any additional requirements imposed by the State Water Resources Control Board and appropriate Regional Water Quality Control Board under state law and their delegated Clean Water Act authority. So, what the Clean Water Act says is to protect the receiving waters and protect the environment, as you know from my previous presentation. I'd also like to address the permits required. One concern about desalinization, and this refers mostly to the CalAmp application, because their water would go to the peninsula to replace the water drawn from the Carmel River. One concern about a desalinization plant at the apex of the Elkhorn Slough and the Monterey Bay Marine Sanctuary is that it may never materialize due to environmental, economic, and logistical problems that might be impossible to overcome. Such a facility would require 28 miles of pipeline to transport desalted water to the seaside aquifer storage and recovery fields. The project also requires 17 local permits, 18 state permits, and 9 federal permits. Design, construction, mitigation, and litigation mean a best-case startup date would be 5 to 10 years from now. Duke will also have to amend their California Energy Commission permit if CalAmp utilizes their intake and discharge structures. So, in conclusion, or pretty close to it, I would like to suggest an alternative that CalAmp is already considering. I was had the pleasure to hear Keith Israel, the general manager of the Monterey Regional Water Pollution Control Agency, give a presentation last Friday regarding the water reclamation plant in Marina. They have been talking to CalAmp about the possibility of partnering. They are currently discharging 10,000 acre feet of water into the bay annually. They have a 2-mile pipeline that discharges way out into the bay. They'd like to be able to utilize that 10,000 acre feet, and a very good possibility is further treatment. Now, this particular facility is world renowned. People come from all over the planet to see the amazing things that they've been able to accomplish with recycled water. As you know, policy is such that the state is encouraging the use of recycled water to offset water needs. Lastly, I'd just like to say and call to your attention one thing in the staff report regarding the chemistry that will be discharged. Peter referred to it in the early part of his report. Quantities, and this is from the Poseidon one, quantities total less than 129 pounds per day of inorganic chemicals, sodium hypochlorite, which is bleach, sulfuric acid, which is also known as battery acid and is sometimes used as a toilet bowl cleaner, powdered activated carbon, which is ground up coconut shells, burnt, and ferric chloride, which acts as a coagulant to settle solids. The point being, 129 pounds a day doesn't sound like very much, but if you do the math, it is 23.5 tons a year, and then you double that with two pilot desal plants, and then if they were to go to full scale, I don't know how many times you would multiply that, but you're talking about tons of stuff in the water that might be perfectly okay for potable water, but potable water doesn't work in the marine environment. And then when you have these pellets and coagulants settling to the bottom, you add insult to injury from the damage that the once-through cooling is doing. So if you'll take that into consideration, I'd like to close by saying it doesn't make sense to partner desal with once-through cooling. Once-through cooling is on its way out. To provide a whole new level of stakeholders in this process is a waste of time and resources. And we just hope that you won't let the camel get his nose in the tent. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your comments. That was our last speaker. This is not an action item, correct? Staff is just
unless you want to direct us to go in a different direction from what we're recommending.
There's no recommendation.
It's still not an action item. It's just staff direction.
Okay. Well, I have a question.
No, go ahead.
Of staff on the DDT issue, are these guys? Can you address that?
We do have monitoring for DDT in the general permit, as well as other Table B parameters.
So they'll have to monitor for DDT.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks.
Dr. Press.
I appreciate some of the speakers' concern that this is the camel's nose. But I guess I think that I'm capable of separating the issues around the 316B permitting for the power plant from the pilot desal plants from the full-scale desal plants. In other words, there are three different kinds of activities that we could be looking at in this same site. Once through cooling, pilot desal, full-scale desal. I think we should be looking at each one of those separately. I think that, in essence, we have to because we don't know what the feds are going to say about the power plant. I think that we can, it seems to me that the issues around the pilot desal are fairly minimal, and that if full-scale projects come before us, then we take a very hard look at it. So I guess I just don't feel like this is the time to deny a pilot project. I think that but I want to put everyone on notice that I would take just as hard a look at full-scale desal as I would at the once-through cooling for the power plant. No question about it. I don't view this as the camel's nose at all. I'm looking at it on its own merits, and in my view, it merits to be tested.
I'd just like to concur with Dr. Press, I think. I'm concerned about the bootstrapping of the pilot projects into some sort of argument later on that, well, you know, we should get the final project because we got this. And that sort of argument certainly won't fly with me, and I hope other people, other agencies don't buy that either. I'm certainly willing to let the pilot projects go. They seem low threat in and of themselves. But the main projects, I think, is a whole different ballgame, And I certainly hope none of this sort of bootstrapping occurs. I look on that very, not very well, anyway. Thanks.
Mr. Jeffries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with my two colleagues to my right, but I just want to clarify a point that this young lady made about dredging at Moss Landing. Since I chair the board of the Moss Landing Harbor District, the only time that we've had upland disposal was after the floods of 97, 95, and 97, which sealed it in the Moss Landing Harbor District, and there was high levels of DDT and other chemicals that we had to upland. But since then, we do meet the requirements, and we are discharging through our discharge pipe into Monterey Bay, and it meets all the requirements. But we constantly monitor for all the constituents in the Moss Landing Harbor District to make sure, as well as the Army Corps of Engineers, which dredge yearly the channel at Moss Landing. So I just wanted to clarify that Moss Landing does not have to upland discharge their dredge sediments every year. That's not true.
Okay. Anything, Dr. Bowker, to add to this?
I think the pilot projects are a good idea. I have extreme reservations about drawing on the Poseidon project from seawater. I'd much rather see them, first of all, as a parallel study. You're both drawing from the same source. You could compare the different plants. And I think that to increase entrainment impingement issues using a resource needs further examination. Mm.
Well, the two plants were really not involved in getting into,
I understand, you know,
which one's better. These are,
I understand, but the whole issue is that I'm concerned about what I would call incremental degradation, where you do a little this time, somewhere
sure.
else you do a little more, you do
collectively,
and I would like to be pretty firm on not. On reducing entrainment impingement issues. Mm. I mean, we've already gone down that road, and
right.
not a good idea.
Right. Well, I agree with everything that's been said, and I think that we have to, and we are, looking at these things independently.
That's what you should.
These are low threat discharges. I don't have any problem with that. I think it's appropriate. Staff has indicated that if one or both of these two projects decides to go into a full-scale operation, we're going to have a full-scale NPDES permit application and review. And at that time, we go through this from top to bottom. So at this point in time, it's really a much different type of presentation because of the way the water is being not used, essentially. So the impacts really are not there as they would be if these were going to be projects that were using the water. There was some suggestion that maybe we do some politicking and get involved with the two applicants and just encourage one of them maybe to move forward. We don't, as an agency, get involved in that type of activity. Anybody that comes before us and submits an application to do something, we just consider those on their merits, and we don't get involved in picking or choosing who's going to come before us. I can't imagine what that would open up in terms of problems if we even open that box up. And in terms of what might be in the water, my sense is there's some concern about water quality. On the water supply end of this, there's a whole other set of regulations that are going to kick in, implemented by the Department of Health Services and the Drinking Water Branch, and that is something that we won't be getting involved in, even with a full-scale operation. It'll just be the impacts from the intake and the any effluent. Anyway.
If I could run back again, am I assuming that we're going to get a report on the mortality rates due to the intake?
If you want.
I would think that would be.
Okay.
I'm not.
One of these is a one-year study and the other.
No, that one, they're using, there's no problem there because they're using the discharge water from the power plant. The one I'm concerned about is the new device and how effective it is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll have staff bring it back to us for a report.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. And we will reconvene this meeting at
8:30
tomorrow morning.